It's Monday, August 14th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show presented by Toyota. It's a hell of a day to talk ball, man. And joining me to do just that is the one and only, the absolutely fantastic Andy Behrens. It's not actually Monday, Andy. It's actually Saturday as we're taping this. Spoiler, peek behind the curtain, whatever you want to say, because we're live on location in the Fantasy Football Expo. What's going on, buddy?
I love that we came to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, which is just this glorious place, and you went straight to a bar and haven't seen one thing yet.
Well, I would be here tomorrow. I've got time to see it tomorrow. It's not like I'm leaving. What do you mean? Everybody else is at the... You act like this was just me. Let me be very clear to the people listening to this podcast. The event today, which I didn't necessarily need to be at, but the event today was at a bar, and I was there as well.
It's fair. I've drafted two teams today. We had the Kings Classic draft, so I've drafted one. The other one was a salary cap draft, so I've just been... I don't know. I've been spewing player names and dollar values for the last 4 hours. So let's do this thing.
Also, you're wearing a hell of a shirt. Would you like to?
I had forgotten.
Would you like to describe to the listeners? Is this on YouTube? Is this show on YouTube? I don't even know.
That's a mistake if it is.
Yeah, that would be a tough scene. But for the people just listening to it, would you like to describe what you're wearing right now?
So, last couple of years at the Fantasy Expo, is this Saturday? Feels like Saturday. Yeah, sure. Oh, man, I'm on top of my game. Saturday has been loud shirt night, loud shirt day. I had a little custom number created with the face of our NBC colleague, Pat Doherty. This is from his brief but glorious mustache era.
He really does look a lot like Hopper from Stranger Things.
He totally does. He absolutely
like a very
does.
Uncanny. You wouldn't think, like, when I first met Pat Doherty and, like, most of the time knowing Pat Doherty, I would never have said, yeah, he's going to look like, you know, that guy, like Jim Hopper from the damn Stranger Things. But the mustache really seals it.
He absolutely does. He's like, I don't know. He's like Andy Reid's 20-year-old son or something like that. Or young Hopper is totally what he is.
Yeah, as a guy with a C- maybe mustache, I'm very, very jealous. But we do have some serious business to conduct, I guess, here today on this podcast. Number one, Andy, preseason has been going on. We have been, you know, nothing short of goofing off here at the Fantasy Football Expo, but there has been some real action taking place in terms of preseason. I was just reading a true real-life blurb about preseason games that Sam Laporta, according to you, a future Hall of Famer, Lions tight end Sam Laporta was held without a catch in his preseason debut versus the Giants. He dropped his lone target. So, Andy, I present, as we are about to talk about preseason here, I present this question to you. Does preseason matter?
All right. First of all, I haven't seen this alleged drop, but I can't believe it was a drop. I can't believe that happened. There's no way. There's absolutely no way. That's just vile propaganda. There's absolutely no way that he went 0-for-1. You can't prove it.
Would you like to slam the website that I read it from? Don't do that. They may or may not be a partner.
So, yes, preseason matters. Not everything matters, right? Sometimes teams will tell us that things matter, right? Like there are legit position competitions going on right now. There's like a Baker Mayfield, Kyle Trask thing that matters. The quality of their play is relatively important. Like with a bunch of rookies, it's really important to see which groups they play with, right? Are they playing in the first quarter? Are they playing with the varsity or are they playing later on? Like that stuff matters. There's a lot of noise. There's a little bit that matters, but not like overall, I just want my guys healthy.
I'll tell you what, Jahan Dotson's touchdown, that mattered to me. So I'm just thankful we've got real football going on, even if it's like real with a, you know, an asterisk. It's not really real. It is better than training camp highlights. There is that. But you're right. For the most part, it's about playing time, not even necessarily performance. But like you brought up the Bucs quarterback competition, and that's a great one to kind of lead in with that. You know, Baker Mayfield played really well, 8 of 9, 63 yards and a touchdown, and he started the game. He threw his touchdown to rookie Trey Palmer. Kyle Trask, 6 of 10, 99 yards and interception. I mean, I think Mayfield has to lose this job to not start week one, and by all accounts he did not do that here in the first preseason game.
And obviously it's not like it has a little bit of super flex relevance, right, the actual quarterback battle, but like the offense as a whole is still kind of too big to fail, right? Like Mike Evans is getting drafted everywhere and Chris Godwin is getting drafted everywhere. And like, I don't know, Kate Otten's a bit of a sleeper. There are some people there that we care about. Rashad White, we care about him mostly as a pass catcher. So like, we don't need Baker Mayfield to become fantasy relevant, but we do need somebody here to be able to support a couple of viable fantasy starters, right?
Is it too big to fail? Like,
well, I mean, we're drafting Evans and Godwin as like fringy wide receiver two, wide receiver three types. I think I picked up Mike Evans in one of these two drafts today, and I've got a little bit of Godwin. But man, by the way, 14 teams, three flexes, three receivers. It gets bad.
Gets bad in a hurry.
Real quick.
Who's the weirdest player you drafted today?
Richie James, twice.
Twice?
I doubled down on Richie James. Yeah.
Oh, that's unbelievable. Yeah, I'm like weirdly intrigued by Kyle Trask. Not that I think Kyle Trask is going to be good. Almost every quarterback evaluator of like collegiate talent that I trust didn't have like great things to say about Kyle Trask. And we're, you know, kind of confused that he went as high as he did. It's just like, I have no confidence in Baker Mayfield, especially the Baker Mayfield, Mike Evans connection. I find that one to be particularly troubling given the guys that Baker Mayfield has struggled to throw to, you know, Odell Beckham, like DJ Moore last year. DJ Moore, you know, is like he's a ex receiver. He mostly lines up where Evans lines up. He runs a little bit of a different route tree, not as vertical, but he's still a vertical player. And it's just like those guys, same thing with Odell Beckham, outside receiver, vertical route tree. And those are the players he struggled with. I'm so nervous about Baker Mayfield.
I actually think we also have to worry a little bit about just, I mean, perhaps we're already there. Mike Evans, like where he's at in his career.
Yeah.
Because he had like you look at the numbers right now and they look fine. They look like every other Mike Evans season, but like 25% of it happened in 1 week.
It was not the smoothest journey to get to the same destination with that we usually arrive in.
And by the time he had the big week, you know, if you drafted Mike Evans early, you probably weren't like on a deep playoff run or anything like that. So that was just a weird sort of flatlined offense last season. But Baker's had the craziest career, by the way.
Yes.
Like he's already had the craziest career and he's maybe only in the middle of it.
He has had a particularly weird career. Even just last year was weird, right?
Super weird.
I don't know. Very nervous about the Bucs quarterback situation. Speaking of confirmation bias in the preseason, as you mentioned, I will say, yes, obviously, I'm excited about the Jahan Dotson stuff. That was awesome. But really, my main confirmation bias, and I actually got to rewatch some of this game in my hotel room this morning. Steelers offense looked good, buddy. You know, again, it's against those Buccaneers and, you know, 27 points overall for the Pittsburgh Steelers. George Pickens has a long and here's the thing. He had a long touchdown. That's not the important part. The important part is it was a route over the middle. He didn't get a ton of separation. He's just never going to be a big separation guy, but route over the middle, catch and run opportunity. George Pickens scores a 33-yard touchdown via Kenny Pickett, who, again, I think Kenny Pickett looked pretty sharp, 6 of 7, 70 yards and a touchdown. And then we had even Deontay Johnson, 3 targets, 3 catches, 32 yards. Calvin Austin popped up for a big play. I do think he's like not on the fantasy radar, but he's an intriguing bit player. Andy, I really am talking myself into the Pittsburgh Steelers this year are kind of like the Seahawks last year. And okay. I know that doesn't make any sense, right? Because Geno was like a veteran quarterback, a transient guy who'd gone team to team, journeyman type. Kenny Pickett's a second year quarterback. But I think the fact that like if we are truly underrating the quarterback in Pittsburgh, and I think we might be, this offense has a lot of talented players and they all could be values this year in drafts.
Yeah, it's a funny team. It's like if you could just give this offense to Sean McVay for like a couple months and see what he would do with it.
Oh my God, yeah.
Because it certainly has playmakers. And we haven't mentioned Freiermuth is great, right? Like, that's somebody who can, we've talked about him before, who can definitely, I don't know.
My guy at tight end this year. I said it on the show with Scott.
You get past the top three, and where are we? Like, Freiermuth can definitely sneak into that.
I pitched this idea to Scott, and you can tell me if it's stupid, because I respect your opinion and stuff. I think he's Pat Freiermuth. I've drafted him in, like, the 9th round in almost every draft this year. Like every time he's there, I just click him. I think he has a pretty similar like statistical range of outcomes to Dallas Goedert this year.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that 100%. Goedert. Goddard's the guy that we stick like 5, 6 in the tight end ranks. And he's He's third in the pecking order,
right?
Just like Freiermuth, basically. Unless Freiermuth is two, maybe he's two.
He could be two.
Yeah.
He could be two. I mean, I think Pickens would have to fall on the low because he's just not going to overtake Deontay Johnson, I think, for top of the team targets. But Pickens would have to fall lower on that X receiver axis I always talk about. Like,
yeah,
maybe less towards the T. Higgins side and more towards the Devontae Parker side or Kenny Golladay, you may be somewhere in the middle there. He'd have to fall into that bucket of the X receiver axis, which I don't necessarily think that's what's going to happen, but that would have to be the case for Pat Freiermuth to be second on the team in targets.
Not a great deal of enthusiasm for Deontay Johnson in the drafts that I just participated in today.
Really?
Right. I think that Deontay went for less than $20 in the salary cap draft, which is just not consistent with him as a player.
What
right?
did Pickens go for?
There was some frenzied bidding between a couple people, and I think he came in at $10 or
name
just shy
names.
Of $10, something like that. I think Howard Bender was involved. There's always going to be somebody in a draft who loves George Pickens, yeah. right? Because he's such a great highlight.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, speaking with preseason like confirmation bias, that's what I'm talking about here with the Steelers offense. But I continue to think that's kind of an underrated unit. We did mention that. One thing that's important with preseason is playing time notes. Two things I think to take into consideration with I know we're fresh off last year with Josh Jacobs playing deep into the Hall of Fame game, and that meant absolutely nothing. But two playing time notes to consider that I want to just kind of heat check you on. One, Jameson Williams played pretty deep into the preseason with a bunch of backups. Got nice separation on a long target, dropped that specific pass. People made a big deal about that. And then second, Greg Dulcich, who not but like 48 hours ago, I was talking about as a really nice breakout candidate on the tight end podcast with Scott, basically plays only on passing downs. Adam Trautman, he of the New Orleans Saints passed with Sean Payton, the connective tissue there. They traded for Adam Trautman after adding Chris Manhertz, who's a blocking specialist, was mostly the inline guy and was on the field the whole time with the offense. And then Greg Dulcich is like the split out guy. He's only on passing downs. Any concern about those two players? We know Jameson Williams has, the suspension, everything. That's fine. But like these two guys, I think that is a playing time note to come out of preseason.
Yeah. Williams is tough. I'm just never going to end up with Williams.
Same.
Like that's just too long to wait for a guy. And as I know myself as a fantasy manager, and I know that's one of my first drops.
Yes.
Like, no way. Cause I churn through players like crazy. Within the first week or so, I'm going to have like five or six drops, right? Like anybody who, I don't know, I take a lot of flyers, right? Like that's just how I draft. I'm not thinking, give me a reasonable 45 catch. Maybe the fact that I've already revealed that I drafted Richie James illustrates that I do not take like high upside with everything.
No, I would say so.
The rest of my guys are like, I'm the guy who walks away with Justin Ross because like, what if? I take a lot of those guys. So I million transactions early in the season, I'm definitely dropping Jameson Williams. There's no way that I'm the guy who holds on to him. So I just don't have any of them. A little bit of a weird fit with Jared Goff, but it's fun offense. And I think it'll work down the road. Dulcich is, but this is a concern, no question about it. And I would expect them, most teams really, to rely on two tight ends throughout the season. But it is a pretty important note. They were also like, he had a lot of buzz for a while there.
Well, it's weird because they had kind of suggested, they being Sean Payton, said, he could be in like a joker role for them. And you could kind of take that two ways, right? You could say like, oh, they have big plans, a specific role for Greg Dulcich. But
yeah, assumed it was good.
Yeah, but you could also say, oh, it's a specific role because he can't play real tight end role, or they don't see him as that type of guy.
Yeah. No, it's a really good point. Oftentimes things come up like that where our tendency is just to hype players and we interpret everything as sunshine, and maybe sometimes it isn't.
Yeah, sometimes it's definitely not. A couple of preseason notes from before week. Well, one of them was yesterday, but Jaden Reed, Luke Musgrave basically played the entire time with the Green Bay Packers starting offense. They were out there a ton. They looked really good. I think both players flashed to me, so that's good to see. And then you look at before we got here in the Seahawks and Vikings game was interesting because Zach Charbonnet, another rookie, looked really good in his role. Pete Carroll had good things to say about him. Jordan Addison had a great should have been catch along the sideline. Did you see that one? I mean, the Vikings, yeah. By the way, What a ridiculous franchise history at wide receiver. I know they had like the Troy Williamson big miss, but they literally drafted like Randy Moss. You know, they had Chris Carter. They had they've got Jordan Addison now. You know, they have Justin freaking Jefferson. What a great wide receiver franchise
Steph
there.
Diggs. Yeah.
So, yeah, Steph Diggs, they Laquon Treadwell. Cordero Patterson. Actually, when you think about it, has any team had more variance at drafting like wide receivers and acquiring wide receivers? I mean, even Adam Thielen, like they didn't draft him, undrafted guy, but he brought him from like the freaking cornfields or whatever. Yeah. And whatever Minnesota State. Yeah. Like they brought him like off the farm and were like, hey, become a star wide receiver for us. But meanwhile, some of our first round picks, a little sketchy. What a variance franchise for the Minnesota Vikings there. And then Tank Dell also looked pretty good. People are really gassed up about Tank Dell catching like a slant pass. So.
Oh man, there was enthusiasm for Tank Dell in the drafts that I
really?
Just had today. And there was not, I won't go as far as to say that there was a bidding war, but there was like a little back and forth when somebody threw Tank Dell out for a dollar, which is just not like Tank Dell's name was not going to get thrown if we'd done this thing 4 days ago, right? Like,
right.
He was buried on the depth chart of a team that we're not interested in terms of its passing offense, right? So, that generated a lot of enthusiasm, and that's like I'm not that into. But you hit on the Packers situation, like that's where you should care about rookies, right?
Right.
Like, who are the rookies playing with? And if
exactly.
And Musgrave in particular, that's just like an early whiff for me. And I've bumped him in the tight end ranks. I'm probably going to bump him again in the tight end ranks, like. That guy's gonna play. That guy's gonna be like their featured tight end. And
yeah.
I was not ranking him that way like in July.
He's ready to rise up for sure. Who has more yards this year, Luke Musgrave or Sam Laporta?
No.
Who has more yards so far this year, Andy?
Please. Okay. First of all, that's rude. obviously Laporta. Question is whether I no longer think that Sam Laporta is going to double up Musgrave. I'll say that.
Got it. Well, that makes sense. And last preseason note here before we move on. I really do appreciate that you took the time to come and do this podcast with me on a day where the Bears are hosting the Super Bowl
right?
parade
clinch
in Chicago.
The NFC?
Literally clinched the Super Bowl appearance, won a Super Bowl because DJ Moore's first catch as a Chicago Bear. I'll say this. Let me like pat myself on the back here real quick, which I never do. I just suggested the other day, you know, the area where DJ Moore was most underutilized in Carolina under the bonehead Matt Rule coaching staff is as a yards after catch threat. And again, preseason, but he basically ran the entire field for the Chicago Bears on his very first catch against Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, that actually happened during my first draft today. And as the highlight was hitting the internet, right?
Yeah.
This draft, by the way, is like on Sirius XM and we're not supposed to, you know, it's supposed to move along and we're not supposed to like interrupt people and all that. And Brad Evans, former colleague, was like, dude, Andy, look at your phone. So the mood among Bear fans is really something. Yeah. Good day from Fields. Good day from Herbert. Good day from Moore. It's really exciting. The early, but I think we've talked about this, but sort of the early, like the mini camp buzz from that team, had been, it's working with DJ Moore. It's not working anywhere else. But that like, the early stories from camp are a little bit different, right? Like there have been some nice Chase Claypool moments. There have been some nice, you know, Justin Fields apparently is connecting with people other than DJ Moore, which is great.
Important.
Right? Like Komet has been a little bit of a story. So there's some nice pieces to the offense. It's just ultimately the question is, are they going to throw it 30 times a game?
I think if you're trying to paint on the optimistic side there, it all still comes back to not taking as many sacks as he has in previous years, because like, if you look at it, again, the two teams last year that passed the ball at, as you say, unserious rates were the Chicago Bears and the Atlanta Falcons. Both those teams obviously want to establish the run. They also employ scrambling passers in Marcus Mariota last year and then obviously Justin Fields. But both of those guys take a ridiculous, unsustainable, like, again, non-serious amount of sacks. So I think that's really the big thing with Justin is he just has to get, and I don't know if he can do it, but that's the thing he has to get out of his game. Cause you know, I'm looking at like my receiver rankings and I definitely don't have DJ Moore in like a, you need to draft this guy range. And really like consensus rankings don't have him in that sort of range either, but I don't think he is AJ Brown as a player. I don't think he's Stephon Diggs as a player. But we have done this in like back in several years here now recently, where we underrate the transformative effect. Again, those guys are better, I think, as individual talents, but really good receiver can have on an offense. And look, obviously, I'm not just saying this because of the preseason highlight today. It's just, if he has that effect on this offense, we're going to look back and be like, we just overthought it with a really good player in DJ Moore.
I will also say that like the Bears receiving core is starting from a very different place from where like Philly's was, right? Like they were already fine. They weren't elite, but like Devontae Smith is great. They were given a lot of snaps to Rager, and like, okay, it was pretty sketchy.
Quez Watkins, Greg Ward.
Yeah. But they at least had a guy, right? The Bears last year had nobody. They had nobody who was just like instantly open off the snap of the football, right? They didn't have anyone of DJ Moore's ability. And like, I don't know, was Mooney their best guy? He surely was their best guy, but like he's not anybody's idea of an alpha receiver, right?
No.
So they just did not have that guy that Justin Fields had instant trust in. So let's hope. He just needs to get down to like, I don't know. If he takes 40 sacks, that's a huge improvement.
40 sacks is a huge improvement.
And it's going to, well, it is. Like it he, is. He took 55 without playing the full season and only throwing 22 times a game, right? So like if he's that guy and he's throwing 35 times a game, he's going to take 100 sacks. I mean, that's the way that's going to go.
The math checks out.
Yeah. But like, you know, just having a receiver that he trusts and is instantly open is going to make a huge difference. Chase Claypool, knowing the offense, being comfortable in the offense is going to make a huge difference. And obviously improvements to the line are going to help as well. But I mean, you're right. He's got to have a working internal clock, which was just clearly not the case last year.
Yeah. I'm really like rethinking this whole DJ Moore thing. I don't know. I got to ruminate on this for a little while longer before I decide like finally where I stand on DJ Moore this year. Enough about preseason. Again, it's better. It's Andy, thank God. It's not training camp highlights season.
Yeah.
It's preseason highlights, at least. It is football-ish. It's football. It's football adjacent. So we'll take it over training camp highlights. But it is strategy week here on the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. No better place to talk about it than the Fantasy Football Expo, which, by the way, when you have been, you know, you've been traveling here. And this isn't your first year doing this, so maybe this is a stupid question. But when people have asked you, what are you here in Canton for? What do you say? Because I've struggled with seriously saying, I'm here for a fantasy football expo. I sat next to a very, very nice man, Cliff, on the flight from Charlotte to Canton. I've had a hell of a time getting here, by the way. Yeah. But Charlotte to Canton, Cliff. Wonderful man, 90 years old, great guy. We had a lot of really good conversation. Sharp as hell for 90 years old too, by the way. And he would let you know. But he asked me, you know, what do you do? Like, what's my job? And I said, I talk about football. And he said, is there any future in that? I'm like, well, I like to think the present is going pretty well. But so I you know, Uber drivers, like, where are you, you know, what are you in town for? I've just been saying like a work conference.
Yeah, it's first of all the casual conversation with somebody on a plane when they ask you when you're a fantasy analyst and they ask you what you do, it's always like, I don't know, how much do I say?
Yeah, Rich Rebar said he tells people, like even relatives, oh, I'm in predictive analysis, which sounds
that's good. Yeah,
that sounds like I'm in financial predictive analysis or anything.
Oh, but you're a zillionaire.
Yeah, right.
Well, no, turns out
no, I'm not certifiably not.
Just projecting target shares. It's not the same thing. Stupid. Yeah, that. But I am going to use that from now on. I think that's actually really good.
Yeah.
People don't ask follow-up questions from that, do they?
They better not.
I hope they don't. Yeah.
You can just say, it's kind of confidential.
Yeah.
You have to have a subscription.
Why don't you become one of my platinum subscribers? You'll find out. I at least have the cover of like drafting teams while I'm here.
Right.
So I always just say, oh, I'm here for a fantasy draft.
You got on a plane for, I guess, these people are kind of your friends.
Oh, I travel for plenty of other drafts. It's not unusual for me to travel for fantasy drafts.
Well, you actually are a zillionaire. You have many palatial estates. You're a
Private jet and whatnot. Right, so exactly. I don't have these conversations.
That's a great point. Did you jet here?
Of course I did. I took the FSWA jet here.
Amazing. Okay, but seriously, back to serious business. It is strategy week. You have been, as you said, participating in multiple drafts here. Any sort of wide view to, and I know you have done drafts before this too. This is not your first time this year, I'm sure. We've done mock drafts, but like this is serious stuff here, Andy, yeah. At the Fantasy Football Expo. Any big picture takeaways from how boards are unfolding so far?
You know, one thing that was interesting about this is we do this little, you know, we do a little lottery to see who's going to pick first in these things. I happened to like draw the ace that allowed me to pick my draft spot ahead of anyone else in this one.
What'd you pick?
Like, I was going to say, where would you go? Because I just take Justin Jefferson. I just put myself at one. People realize this, I think, because I pop up in their drafts and I try to tell them something about their draft slot, right? At Yahoo. I've done that.
Do you
for
listen
years.
To yourself like when that pops
yeah.
up? Like,
of course I do.
Excellent point. I should. The third overall pick is pretty good. Me.
The greatest is to be actually at a live draft where we're all doing it together, but we're doing it online, and like I pop up on all the Skype. I freaking love that. And I make everybody listen to the entire video because who knows if we care about, you know, people watching the video to the end. Anyway.
And that's why he has a private jet.
But one of the things that I look at each year when we film those things is the performance of the draft slot, not just the year before, but like over the long haul. Right. And there's less of an edge to the number one spot in football because it's. Man, your whole draft is going to go the way like your first round pick goes sometimes, yeah. Right? But it does matter to be in the top half of a draft. It's not perfectly fair. That doesn't, like, there are years, like a couple of years ago, the 11th and 12th spots randomly did really well. They do not do as well as the other spots historically, right? So you do have an edge being in the top five. I've read and heard a lot of people say that they think there's, I don't know, three, four, five players for whom you can really have a credible argument for number one. And I get it. Like, I can formulate an argument for other guys, but I think Justin Jefferson is the clear number one. I think his career is off to an almost perfect start.
Yeah.
I think he's a damn near perfect player. Hasn't missed a game. Each year is better than the last. And he's like, he's freaking 24 and he's had like an 1800 yard season.
And he scored 8 touchdowns last year. That's the crazy thing about Justin
Jefferson.
While
leading the position in red zone targets, right?
Right.
Like, so there's, a 14 touchdown season for Justin Jefferson is definitely out there somewhere.
I have weirdly been Kirk-pilled over the last like couple weeks. And this is a very recent thing for me. And I fully admit that maybe it is because I watched a few episodes of the Netflix quarterback. You watch any of it?
I have not seen it yet. No.
And Kirk is great in it. And I think the real thing you do get an appreciation for Kirk Cousins in that show, beyond just like him as a person, all that stuff, is he got the shit kicked out of him last year.
Yeah.
Like, you forget that he was taking punishment and just like, this guy's getting pummeled. And again, you can hear it all. And he's just like, and how much agony he's in. And I think, you know, a lot of people point out like, oh, his touchdown rate was down, his, you know, YPA was down, stuff like that. But they also asked him to do so much more in that offense. Like, Kevin O'Connell came over and basically didn't install like the Jared Goff, like keep it in the lines, like cookie cutter Rams offense. He more so installed the like Matt Stafford Rams offense where they're just dropping back and asking the quarterback to do a lot. And like, Justin Jefferson doesn't have the season he did last year without a little bit of help from Kirk Cousins. I mean, he's doing the heavy lifting. And so I don't know. I say all this to say that, like, I agree with you. Justin Jefferson's the number one overall pick with a bullet. And even if he doesn't end up being the best player in fantasy, that's not really the point. He's just a clear number one pick. And there is room for him to be even better than he was last year.
Yeah. The other thing I did in both of these drafts is I didn't go in with this plan, but I kind of had like hero RB builds. And I didn't really allocate like a lot of resources to running back generally. So like in the hero RB build, it wasn't like I took Nick Chubb. It wasn't like I took McCaffrey. Like, I have Aaron Jones on one team. I got like a cheap Kenneth Walker on the other team, but I don't even know who my RB2 is on either one. Right. Like, that's going to come down to a week of decision because they aren't great, but my receivers are great on each team. So it was about as close as you can come to being a zero RB draft without being technically a zero RB draft.
Yeah. Hey, talk about that though, because I get this question a lot. Like, do you go into drafts with wanting to, like, should I go into my draft wanting to execute a zero RB strategy or a hero RB strategy. And like my point to people is always, it kind of depends, right? Because if you're at the fifth overall pick, let's just say, and like for me, I have a clear top five of players. And if Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, you know, let's just even say like Cooper Kupp and like Christian McCaffrey go off the board, like I probably want to take Austin Eckler at that fifth overall pick, even if I thought going into it, ooh, zero RB might be a good strategy. You know what I mean?
This one, this league in particular is full PPR, right? So
yeah,
heavily slanted toward wide receivers already, heavily slanted toward anybody who's got a chance at 100 targets. And it's also, because it's a pretty deep league, it's again, it's 14 teams, three wide receivers, three flexes. So like you're going to start some dogs, right? Like you're going to start some guys where you're like, everybody has a weak roster.
Tell me about it, yeah.
So it's almost liberating, right? Because like, it's fine. if my second running back is you know, a pretty sketchy player, yeah, or somebody who's got a huge range of outcomes, that's okay. Because everybody's going to have two or three roster spots that they really don't feel totally comfortable with coming out of this thing.
Yeah.
I've done zero RB builds in this league before, and I think two of the best teams that I've drafted in this thing, including one league winner over the years, were zero RB teams that everybody hated when I came out of it. Right, like I got roasted on the SXM broadcast. I think I took Kupp in like the fourth round, something like that, and I was getting beat up on the radio for that.
Oh, I had Cooper Kupp over, like, I didn't have him high enough, but I had him over Robert Woods that year, and I cannot tell you how many people told me I was a stone cold idiot.
I mean, it was the critical decision in fantasy football, yeah, as it turned out that year, yeah.
But my point in asking the question was, like, do you go into drafts with a strategy, like, laid out, like, I want to execute this, or is it kind of more like when the board comes to you?
Yeah, I've never, I will say when I have executed a zero RB build, I have never deliberately plan to do it in advance. It is always something where, like, generally it happens to me when I'm picking in the back half of a draft too. There might be a couple running backs that I like and they're gone, and then I have no problem building with you know, two of the top six receivers, top seven receivers at the top, and then we're off, you know?
yeah I agree. I just kind of like, just I think it let it come to you and everything like that. Quarterbacks. I've talked a lot about quarterbacks this year. Like, I think everything starts with quarterbacks. I think, you know, that kind of dictates how the rest of your draft is going to go based on what positions you're going to be passing up. If you didn't take a quarterback early, if you do take a quarterback early. So how did you approach quarterbacks? And more importantly, how did everybody else in your drafts approach quarterbacks?
In the salary cap draft, I gave myself Steph Diggs and Josh Allen.
It's a nice gift.
Felt freaking great about it. Yeah. My first three players that I had on my roster were Kelsey at a pretty good price, and then Diggs, and then Allen. And I was like, I don't know, I was kind of celebrating a little prematurely there. That felt really, really good. I like pairing those two. I mean, you don't have to stack everybody, but if you can stack one of the five best receivers in the world with one of the, I don't know, three best quarterbacks in the world,
it's not bad.
That's in an offense that's going to score 30 a game.
You could have just done three for both.
That I could have. I really could have. That felt pretty good. I don't do that all the time. I was in the other one. I had picked first, so I was at a turn, and I do try to anticipate the position runs, especially in something this deep, right? There's 14 teams in this thing. So like if I miss a position run, it's really bad. So somebody had taken a quarterback before me, and I ended up with Trevor Lawrence in that one, like maybe round six, round seven, round eight, something like that. Lawrence for me is like the last guy where I can plausibly imagine him. I don't think he's going to win the MVP.
Yeah.
But I think he's one of those last guys who can end up in the conversation. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty clear to me at that point that I was not going to have such a player if I'd waited at quarterback. So I took him there.
Yeah, I think he is the tier break. Yeah. He's the last guy for me in that tier. And then if I don't, but honestly, I haven't ended up with much Trevor Lawrence because I actually don't. I think he is actually the first of the like tier three quarterbacks where, you know, my top four is Hurts, Mahomes, Allen, Lamar Jackson. Then I think there's Burrow, Fields, and Herbert. Like, do you think Trevor Lawrence is in that tier? Again, I agree with you that once Lawrence comes off the board, then you're like, all right, I can wait. I can kick this thing down the can a little bit.
The thing with Lawrence is he hasn't had the season yet, yeah, right? Like, so you're tempted to put him in a different tier. It's just you don't have to have a fantastic imagination to come up with Trevor Lawrence throwing for 4,800 yards with Calvin Ridley. And my thing with Lawrence is I'm stuck on his collegiate career, and I am convinced that he can be a rushing quarterback. Like, I don't think he's going to be like a 700 yard guy. I don't think he's going to be Daniel Jones, But I can't believe at some point he's not gonna run for 500 yards and five touchdowns. Like that is very within his range of outcomes. I don't think they want him to do it. It's probably the smart thing to not ask him to do it, but he's great at it.
The funny thing about like Joe Burrow, you know, it's like, oh, Joe Burrow, great passer. You know, that's why he was great in fantasy last year. I mean, yeah, he was good. He obviously as a passer, but 4,400 yards, 35 touchdowns, 12 interceptions. That's not going to get you to be a top five quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, what's going to get you to be a top five quarterback is rushing sneakily for five touchdowns.
Yes.
Like that's what we need for Trevor Lawrence, or for Trevor Lawrence is just to pop in like five or six or so touchdowns.
He also seems like he could be a goal line guy too, right? Like he's
huge.
Yeah.
He could just do the reach over thing. Yes. You know?
Yeah. He should be doing that. He should have like, I don't know, early career Dak when Dak would just run for,
a little boot out there too. Play.
Yes. Yeah. That should happen.
If they ever decide who their goal line back is, it's raining pretty hard out there.
I was getting weather reports from weatherman Brad Evans during these drafts. Brad was monitoring tornadic cells in the area.
Oh my God. Yahoo Airwaves missed that. Tornadic cells.
Weather Brad?
Yeah. Weather Brad, yeah. Who doesn't miss that? I personally miss it. Other strategy stuff here, you know, again, I think it all starts at quarterback, but kind of trickling down from there. You know, we have talked a lot on this feed because we had Scott Barrett on about, you know, really upside wins championships and just really being focused on players' upside cases and not so much caring about, like, the floor. Did you approach any drafts this way today, or were you kind of a little more conservative than that?
The one funny thing about these drafts in particular is that we have relegation in these leagues.
Hey, what does that mean?
So, if you actually finish last in the combined standings or something like that, the combined point totals between the two leagues, they send you down to a lower league. Yeah, which is, I don't know. It's not really a lower league. It's just a different bunch of fantasy experts also drafting at the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Are you in the top bucket right now? Also, I'm not in any of these,
I'm in the top bucket, but I started out in the top bucket, and I've just avoided relegation, right? Like, I've won the thing before, but
is that you are the elite tier.
I am the elite tier, and I don't want to leave it, which is, again, that's stupid.
Just clip Andy saying, I am the elite tier. That's it. I just want that clip, and I want to be able to tweet that out.
That's fine.
While he's wearing a Pat Doherty printed Hawaiian shirt, I am in the elite tier.
So, like, you are also trying to avoid relegation. So there are some industry leagues that I'll approach, both baseball and football, where it's just like, I'm either going to win this thing or I don't care, you know? And you can't think that way exactly in this particular league, right? So you have to think floor a little bit more than I normally would.
11th place seems pretty tempting. But overall, I mean, well, not the most tempting, but, you know, mildly tempting, better than 12th.
As a general approach to drafting, though, I think it pays. And this only breaks down for me when we're talking like 16 teams, 20 teams. If it's really deep, then you got to be thinking about floor. Otherwise, I mean, I very much agree with Scott. Like, you need to tell yourself a story about, how does this guy become a difference maker? And if you don't really think they're a difference maker, don't waste your time with them.
Makes sense to me. Wide receivers. I'll tell you what, Andy, if I don't draft three receivers in the first, honestly, four, but I'll just say five to be conservative. I don't draft receivers in the first, three receivers in the first five rounds. I hate my team every single time. And I like guys that go after that range. I'm in this Apex writers draft, you know, with like a bunch of not elite tier like Andy Behrens, but a bunch of heavy hitters, right? And this is like a PPR start bunch of wide receivers. Like, wide receivers are hoarded in this league. It's disgusting. And, you know, I took two running backs higher than normal. I took Eckler in the fifth overall pick. And, you know,
it'd be super awkward for you if you didn't have a fair amount of Austin Eckler.
Well, I mean, last year, I think I only had one Eckler team, and it was the Scott Fishbowl. And, like, I didn't even know we were going to be hosting that podcast together at that time, right? So I remember telling him that, too. I was like, yeah, I actually don't have any Austin Eckler teams except this one giant charity league.
Bro, I faded you hard.
Yeah. Strategically this year, does it make sense to sort of, again, I, like, break my own rule, what I said earlier, just be like, I'm taking four receivers in the first five rounds, no question about it. Three receivers, sorry.
I the Yeah, if there's one thing that has really stuck out to me in all the drafts that I've done so far, it's that wide receiver is weird because it feels like it's missing a tier or two. Like you get through that first, I don't know what the number is, if it's 45, 46, 48.
It's 45, by the way, because I completely agree with you.
And then it's like there's a tier missing.
Yeah.
And I like some of the guys after the first 45, but I don't... They don't feel like they should be next, right?
Right.
Like I'm very quickly into the total fly. I'm very quickly into the, you know, for me, it's Mims and Jalin Hyatt and one of the Texans. I've got my guys that I think are really interesting flyers, but they hit so quickly.
Yeah,
right?
It really does. Like, okay, so tier six for me, and it starts at 39 and it ends at 48. Jordan Addison, Quentin Johnston, Elijah Moore, Juju Smith-Schuster, Treylon Burks, Brandon Cooks, Sky Moore. That's the 45.
Yeah.
And then I just hedge ranked the three Ravens receivers from 46 to 48. And I think, so again, those guys, those three are probably like more so flyers than anything else. But after Sky Moore, I'm like, the target projection here gets hairy. The outlook projection here gets hairy. And then my tier seven is highlighted by Nico Collins, who I am, you know, excited about, even though CJ Stroud
played.
That's
the name I was going to say. Like, all of a sudden, the name Nico Collins hits.
Like, ooh,
and I'm
this
like,
is good.
Oh, man, I wasn't ready for Nico Collins for another 45 minutes.
100%. And then it's just like, I have a bunch of dudes who are going to get more volume than people want, but it's going to happen. Such luminaries like Cortland Sutton and Adam Thielen and Van Jefferson and Michael Thomas. Yeah, that Michael Thomas. So, yeah, I'm with you that I don't want to be sitting there at that point and need, like, my receiver four. Yeah. I want Nico Collins, who I like this year, to be my receiver five.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. And I don't, like, receiver's not always this way. And that's probably going to end up being wrong. I'm sure there's a lot of guys that are going to hit from that range. They're just such unknowns. I just feel like we get to the unknowns so quickly and with such a stark drop off.
Any final things you want to say about the Fantasy Expo? Any gossip you want to let us in on? Any people you want to slam here? There's a flag football tournament going on. If you've heard a lot of noise in this, well, there's a lot of things going on. But if you heard some noise in this podcast, there's, you know, a ridiculous storm that looks like it could take us down at any moment.
Yeah.
There's a flag football tournament going on right in there. You know, I was not even close to tempted to participate in that, but. Anything else you want to get off your chest? About the
I will just remind people, like, this thing is really fun. And it's, I don't know, we're all like fantasy guys, so it's a little awkward. It's all a bunch of people that you know from the internet and you're meeting for the first time. It is a really fun event. It is stunningly well organized by Bob Lung. It has always been really fun. I love coming to this thing. And it's not all just writers. So
yeah.
I don't know if you're a hardcore player. It's relatively cheap. Housing in Canton is relatively cheap. I don't know. Come. It's a good time.
Yeah, definitely come check it out. I just met Andrew a couple of minutes before I walked over here. And, you know, he's saying, like, listen to the podcast and it influenced his strategy for drafting, you know. So, like, that was cool. Shout out to Andrew.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. Anybody, like, that wants to come should definitely come. It's a very cool event. And like you said, shout out to Bob who does just a great job with this. Also, I mean, like, you know, if you're an aspiring content creator,
yes,
or whatever, you should 100% be here. I'll give a shout out to Hutch, who introduced himself to me. Was awesome. Definitely got to get him on the pod at some point. He did introduce himself. He did come up to me and say, Mr. Harmon, which I said, yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you, but we're going to have to try that one more time. So it was great to meet somebody like Hutch. And if you are somebody like that, you know, guy's like 17 years old, you know, trying to like find his way. If you're someone like that, 17, 27, 37, 71, I don't know, you're Cliff from My Flight, 90 years old, trying to find out if you can make it as a football content creator, definitely come to this event.
So far, Hutch has only come to this thing with his dad, by the way, is a great guy.
Great guy.
I love talking to him. He's only come with his dad. He's never attended this thing unchaperoned. I'm really going to feel old the first time Hutch comes to the expo without a parent.
Yo, how about when he like comes and has got a beer in hand? You know, that's what Andy, let's just say, like, when that happens, not me, I'm significantly younger than you. But you, it's time to hang up the cleats.
It really is. It truly is.
All right, well, this has been a blast. Colin wrote on the outline for me to say we need to do more in-person podcasts. I'm good. But it was but it was fun. This whole weekend has been fun. I think As long as we don't, like, you know, drown in this this torrential.
Which can't be ruled out.
It can't be ruled out. I think we're going to have a good time tonight. If you're listening to this, hopefully you enjoyed it as well. If it's a social media app, don't connect with me. But you can find Yahoo Fantasy there. It's at Yahoo Fantasy on Twitter/X, whatever we're calling it, Instagram and TikTok. I am at @MattHarmon_BYB if you are so tempted. That's at Andy Behrens. Definitely follow him for probably seeing a picture of this damn shirt he's wearing.
It's glorious.
You can also watch us on YouTube at Yahoo Sports. We are back on Tuesday, continuing Draft Strategy Week with the aforementioned very handsome Scott Pienowski. We take a look at the fantasy quarterback evolution that is taking place. We may also dive into some Superflex strategy. Until then, we're out.